Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Here's a new song by Keith Urban. Hi, John. That was Keith Urban. Did you like it?
It was very Urbanomic. Yeah, I did like it. Keith Urban's pretty cool.
The chorus was, everything I needed to learn was John Cougar, John Deere, and John 316.
Wow. That's crazy. That's, now, is that the guy that's a judge on American Idol that's married to Nicole Kidman?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, he's, you know, good-looking guy, great-looking guy, you know, great voice, great performer. Yeah, I like him. He's a cool dude. Almost too perfect, you know, you're almost like, you know, someone shouldn't have all that stuff going on in their life. You know?
Well, then now I'm thinking he must be a Christian, too. You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting because I wouldn't have picked that up. I mean, not that he's not anti-Christian, but he's just kind of more like a cool, almost like a party guy kind of thing. But, you know, he is very nice. He's very, he's a pretty decent guy. So I could see where he's a Christian, but he's a very, he's in a very high-profile situation where you not so much don't want to smell like you're a Christian or be too churchy. So I think he does a good job.
Yeah, I was trying to find the picture of them as you were describing them. She's performing at a play in London right now.
Yeah, she's,
of some,
from what I
you know, she's in her mid-40s, and she she's had two kids in the last 5 to 10 years. I know she had Sunday, the daughter. She's at least 6 years old, I'm pretty sure.
Wow. Well, she's been through a lot, and I think she's pretty cool. I would say it's hard being a celebrity couple, and that's kind of what they have to deal with. If I was him, you know, I probably would be with a younger gal. But the problem is, you know, that can backfire because they can leave you, take your money, and they're unstable. So I think they're both Australian. So I'm sure they've got kind of common values that way. But it's got to be a lot of pressure when you figure he goes on tour. And his wife's beautiful, yes. But, you know, 30 years ago, she was what the girls that are chasing him now are. You know, that's a tough line of work to be involved in. What do you think to that, Hammer? Ladies and gentlemen, we've lost Jane Hoffman. Or, ladies and gentlemen, we've lost John Yoder.
Oh, I put myself on mute by mistake.
Ah, okay. I thought I was having a moment.
Okay, he was born, they're the same age, Mr. Donald Trump sexist. They were both born in 1967, and they're both... She's 48 and he's 47. She probably had a birthday ahead of him this year.
Right. Well, and that's. But the thing is, if I saw them just based off of what I've seen on TV, I would say he's in his mid-30s. And I would say she's a very beautiful woman that's in her 50s. And I don't mean that as a... At all. So it's really hard.
It's probably because she was married to Tom Cruise and you think she's older, but she's not. Tom Cruise is 54 and she's 48.
You know, well, that could age you 10 years, just the whole Scientology thing. And again, you know, not to be critical because, you know, who am I, right? It's like, oh, yeah, John thinks she's trash. No, I'm just saying that I'm speaking just as in the industry kind of standard. She doesn't look like she's... He looks younger than her, I'll put it that way. And guys can get away with that a little bit more. You know, she's in the pretty business, so she has to look pretty. And I think she's probably taking some time off to raise her family, so she's probably not trying to look perfect.
Okay. Do you want to know what the topic of the show is? It's not Nicole... I was going to say Nicole Brown Simpson. It's not Nicole Kidman. It's I'm Jimmy Carter and I want to be on your school board, plus the Donald and Carly Fiorina. He said, with a
wow.
face like hers, she'll never be president this week.
Wow.
So let's start out with
cool.
Let's start out with a light topic. The edit. One of the contributors to the Rolling Stone was on CNN tonight with Anderson Cooper, and he said two poignant things about the Trump. Number one, that he has a animalistic instinct to be the shark in every situation and attack, which is no surprise. And the second profound thing he said was that he stopped growing emotionally at 13 or 14, and that's why he engages in name-calling. Now, he was kicked out of a prestigious academy at age 13. It was a military academy, and he was rerouted to another prep school. And he came to a psychological conclusion that he is emotionally stunted at preteens. And this week, he called Carly Fiorina the face. no one could ever elect her to office because of that face.
Oh, wow.
And then he tried to retract it and say that he was talking about her persona, not her visual looks.
Wow.
Well, that's the Donald for you. But, you know, I have to say, in working in office situations with people, people think that type of stuff. And not only that, in our office, I mean, I've been in a couple offices, but in the one where I was at for about 10 years, we had a couple gals working in the office. And I have to tell you, the women were brutal in judging people. They would have a People magazine. And I remember this one afternoon, they were talking about Jennifer Lopez and Mark Anthony and their kids. And they're saying, oh, look at their kids. They're just so ugly. And they're going to look like Mark Anthony. And that's so hideous. And I was sitting there going, they're 2 or 3 years old. It's like, give them a break. And it's like, Mark Anthony actually is kind of a sex symbol. I mean, maybe you don't care for him, but, you know, the point is, he's not an ugly guy.
He kind of has, like, hollow eyes.
Right. So, you know, it kind of has a little bit of that kind of Halloween, Frankenstein kind of, you know, potential. And probably when he gets older, yeah, he'll probably look kind of, have a haunting face. But the point is like, it's not like he's grotesquely ugly, you know. And they started talking about these other couples they were looking at, kind of like, the Jennifer Garner, Ben Affleck kind of couples, which, see how that all works out. But the point is, they were looking at some of those couples going, oh, they're so happy, and look how beautiful their kids are, and, you know, they just have it all, and everything's wonderful for them. And you're thinking, that's just their face. That's just skin on bones, you know. It's like, that doesn't define anything. If you were to take just skeletons, not see skin, just see skeletons walking around, you couldn't tell who's beautiful and who's ugly. You know, you really couldn't. That's just all superficial packaging. So the point is, the women would pull out their magazines and every.
Are you talking
day,
about Carol and Stacy?
No, but even if it was, I wouldn't say that. But no, actually, it wasn't. But the point is that they're typical of most Americans who pick up a People magazine. I like reading People and Us and all those, but people think that. In the superficial. And you think like, man, this person's beautiful. They have it all. This other person's ugly. They have an ugly kid. Their life is ruined. And it's just a really bad set of morals.
The thing
to
is,
have.
Is Don, I've just read the article while you were talking, and Donald Trump, The View asked him by telephone today about Kanye West, if he'd share a ticket with him. He said, I'm not going to criticize Kanye West because he always speaks so highly of me. Carly Fiorina insulted Donald by rebutting, and that's why he was on the warpath with her.
Right.
He felt like he had to fight back.
He likes to roughhouse it, and the point is, people think these things in their mind. They just, most people don't have the nerve to say it, and he does. So is it a little juvenile? Yeah, but it's kind of East Coast. And if you go to a baseball game, you'll see fans that show up, and they're like that. They're just like drunken, angry people, like grade schoolers. You know, grade schoolers love to pick on other kids and just, you know, basically bully them. I mean, some people live that way. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think he does, to be more presidential, he's going to have to tone down his rhetoric because really, you just, it's not, if you're 32% in the polls, which is what he is right now, you don't have to insult people. You can just fly on your own policy position statements. Now, he's not, another thing the Rolling Stone guy said is that he doesn't have a traditionally functioning team, you know, like people planted in each state with strategists. He just has a bunch of yes men around him. with no particular
right.
altruistic strategy in mind.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting about the Trump is that if he wasn't who he was, if he wasn't a celebrity and he wasn't basically known for being a successful businessman, and which implies he's rich, you know, maybe he has some money, but maybe he doesn't, but he hangs around people that are rich, for sure. The point is, he's got a different standard, because the average person, yeah, you have to be more presidential and more appropriate, but the problem is, or his advantage is, people have seen him in TV, in The Apprentice and other shows, and beauty contests and other things. He's a celebrity. So everyone already knows him, and everyone's expecting it from him. Like, you wouldn't, if he wasn't like this, you'd say he's acting and he's being phony.
Yeah,
so
they mentioned that actually on the show. You're very astute. You could be a host. They said because of the name recognition and because he's so well known from all his shows like The Apprentice and his Donald Trump University, that it's not a big surprise when he behaves this way.
No, it's not. And also, in a way, it's almost safe. Like, he may fire someone, but he's not like a mobster, say he's going to pull a gun and he'll beat someone up. He's not. He might get sued, but you really don't see him losing a lawsuit that's, you know, major. So it's usually stuff like he'll claim bankruptcy for one of his business ventures, and people go, oh, see, he filed bankruptcy. It's like he's got millions of different little LLCs and businesses, and when one of them is losing money, he folds it. It's not that he's broke or that his other 50 businesses are broke. It's just that particular one. It's like a card game, you know. He's just closing shop on that one. So he's not broke. He's not going to live in the streets. But he has a few bankruptcies on his record. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
don't want to talk too much about the Donald, but the reason that I enjoyed CNN tonight is, A, I haven't watched it in a week. B, they had someone insightful on there, because the Rolling Stone usually has excellent writers. They portray cultural and political and other types of stories extremely well. And I thought it was a stretch for that guy to psychoanalyze Donald, but I thought it was kind of amusing, too, that he put him in the framework of a 13-year-old mentality, which is,
it's appealing, though, to a lot of America. I think what you'll find is probably East Coast, West Coast, we'll probably accept it because we're used to celebrities and entertainment, and we like that kind of stuff. We like money and power. I think he will, if it gets down to serious election time, and, you know, I'm talking, say he were to win the Republican Party and then compete
nomination
for the president.
Yeah.
I think people at that level would start to get scared, more like middle America, you know, people in Nebraska, people in Arkansas, the whole center of the country would start to, you know, they would be uncomfortable with it. People on the West Coast would go, yeah, the Donald, woohoo, you know, it'd be like a celebrity.
I guess the thing is I look at it from this standpoint. You know how, like, gang members are territorial and they stake out their territory? Well, the only feedback he's giving the other 15 Republican candidates, plus a few jabs at the Democrats, is through a fighter mentality, that he's marking his territory, where he doesn't really need to. He doesn't need to be confrontational with all the candidates. The only ones he's been very confrontational with are those who have made a few public comments about him. No, he says he can take it, but he can't.
He likes to respond. He likes to mix it up. And I think people in the beginning, you know, at least in the early stages, I think they like this. I think it's entertaining. It'd be interesting to see what kind of endorsements he gets, because the Republicans are notorious for getting nothing. I mean, usually they'll have maybe one country Western star. They'll usually drag out Clint Eastwood or John Voight or some, you know, celebrity that was really hot 40 or 50 years ago. Now, Clint Eastwood is still hot as far as a director. He can act, but the point is, he's not. You're not going to cast him as your A-list to carry a movie, you know, nowadays, unless he writes it, directs it, and has a younger star in it with him. So it'll be interesting to see, would Donald get, you know, some rappers or some singers. I mean, I think Hillary or whoever is going to get all the young, you know, acts, all the college kind of, you know, and the Katy Perrys and the Taylor Swifts and the Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm not so worried about, I'm not really worried about endorsements. I saw an excellent commercial by Jack Nicholson in 2008. Let's just pick women's issues. Now, Trump says he treasures women, and I just read an article where he said he treasures women. But on the other hand, he slammed Rosie O'Donnell, Megyn Kelly, the Fox lady who asked him tough questions, and Carly Fiorina. Now, Hillary's, out of all the issues, Hillary's the strongest in his women's issues. She attended a conference with her daughter when her daughter was like 10 in China. Can people differentiate between there? Can they really see whether they like Donald better personality-wise, who would be the better president? I mean, because even Walter Mondale probably would have made a better president than Reagan, but he wasn't picked because of his boring personality.
That would be rather interesting. I think one thing about Donald, he treasures women, but more if they're wearing a swimsuit and competing for one of his contests. I think any woman that's kind of bitchy and kind of lesbian or alpha, you know, butch, that kind of thing, I think that's where he would have a problem with a woman. But if it's a pretty girl coming in there, sexy, you know, movie starlet, he'd be all over that. But, yeah, I think his value system would be a little skewed entertainment-wise. However, on his shows, like with The Apprentice, he usually will have – he likes a smart, you know, chick that can run business. You know, I will say that. He does respect people's business power.
Yeah, I thought it was a parody tonight that there was this pretty blonde with her hair was curled, her hair was long, and she was in a yellow dress. And she was analyzing Trump's moves with Anderson Cooper and kind of being semi-mocking. And at the same time, I was thinking if he was watching that show, he'd probably find her hot, even though he was criticized. She was, because the other two women on the show were playing, and she was like this gorgeous blonde with a very good political mind. So I just thought there was kind of a, it was kind of a paradox. So,
and as you know, in the entertainment field, if you're on a TV show, you can't be boring, you can't be generic, you can't be too wordy. You have to be to the point and colorful and be able to zing and zap people and have people remember your you know, what you've said. So you need a lot of catchy phrases and stuff like that. So he's pretty quick with that. And so I could see he would be good for television. With a little coaching, you know, as far as political responses.
He kind of shoots Hillary, from the hip.
Yeah. Hillary, I haven't followed her much this year, so I don't know if she stepped up her game. She kind of comes off sometimes a little flat or a little kind of heady and not funny, not like where you sit down and you want to hear her tell stories for an hour. So, Donald, you want to sit down there and shoot the breeze with him. You know, you'd talk all kinds of subjects, and he'd be very candid and funny. So even if he's annoying and a jerk sometimes.
Well, Hillary had a more, she did grow up in Northern Illinois. She had a more conservative upbringing where some people in the Midwest don't express their emotions like me. Now, when I was on TV for Northland Voices, the camera angle was right at my chin and just my side of my face. They never once showed my eyes. And I talked in my regular monotone voice. And I said some animated things, but I was terrible on the air, on television.
Yeah, some people don't translate well. Sometimes it takes a little coaching. I think the thing with Hillary is when she talks, at times it's like it's your mom talking to you, you know, like when she starts saying, well, we should have done this and done that. It's almost like, and after that, clean your room and make sure that you do your chores. You know, it's that kind of tone when she starts talking about what we should do as plan of action, whereas Trump is more, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to change and shake things up. And it's like you feel like you're at a circus or a TV show or something. It's entertaining. You know, he'll do it in a colorful way. He'll do a lot of catchphrases, whereas with Hillary, again, it's kind of almost this, man, I'm getting scolded. You know, she's not mad at me, but it's just that mom demeanor. And maybe she's changed. I don't listen to her every day. I'm just speaking of every time I see her or do an interview, it just seems like she's my mother talking to me.
She is a policy wonk, too. She'll go into great detail about certain issues.
Do you think she'll have any challenges to win the nomination for the Democratic Party?
I think that... Just a minute, please.
Oh, careful.
The dynamics are so strange this year that there is no way at this point I can predict anything. Here we have Bernie Sanders, who has never sold out to any corporate PAC, and he's riding the wave of popularity. Then we have the Donald, who is very unorthodox, even in his campaign strategy. Then we have Hillary, and I think if Joe Biden joined, it would be a huge mess. We already have enough decisions to make, but in the end, I do think that Hillary will have a strong showing, but I can't even predict if she'll take the primary. I just can't do it.
Sounds like there's a lot of room for the hammer to put her hat in the race.
There's also a couple wild horses like John Cassius. He's a lot more sane than Mark Rubio and a few others. And I think Jeb Bush is just going to turn out average. There's, you know, no one's even talking about Chris Christie. And
yeah,
he was a front runner
six years
before he ran.
Yeah, I thought Jeb would kind of step it up and get a little traction, but it looks like he's kind of mired in basically the whole family name. You know, it's like he's not rising above it. It's kind of the legacy of his brother is kind of overwhelming him more than the legacy of his dad. So that's just a tough thing to overcome because America has a really bitter taste in their mouth. Now, I'm kind of different. I think that you can't look at the first 10 years or even 20 years sometimes to see the impact. You know, you look about 40 or 50 years later and then you say, maybe, you know, we were doing the right thing or maybe we were in the right direction. You know, you got these people from ISIS running all over the place going crazy. So, you know, maybe we needed to be even stronger over there. But then again, 100 years from now, we may have said, why did we ever touch the Middle East at all? You know, because these people will go on for thousands and thousands a year. They have the stomach for this. It fuels them because it's a blood war. We just don't have... It's kind of like a blood feud between brothers or a family feud. We're not really related to that. So that's come we don't understand it. We just wanted to, you know, shake it up a little and get out. And these people don't want to give it up. It's like, this is what they do. This is their life. And we don't get that. So that's come we don't have the heart for it. But You can't close your eyes and make it go away. It's too powerful of an area. There's too much at stake with the oil and the way the world is, you know, to power the machines of war and peace. You got to have the Middle East under control.
I agree. Now, can we can we shift gears a little bit and take a release off the national framework and start? The topic of my show tonight is I want to be a candidate like Jimmy Carter. I want to show the love, and even if I lose, that's my persona that I want to do.
Wow. You know, that's pretty cool.
I'll explain
it's a noble
why,
thing.
Because, well, maybe I shouldn't
did
have picked him as the imagery for my campaign.
Did the spirit of Jimmy Carter leap inside you since we find out that he's kind of in a terminal situation? Or does he feel there's a void there? You kind of need to pick
no,
up the...
Well, before, let me, okay, we have 30 minutes left, but we don't have to go the whole 30 minutes. But the fact of the matter is we have two more topics. So we're going to spend 15 minutes on my candidacy and 15 minutes on 9/11. It's the 14th anniversary as of midnight of the Twin Towers collapsing, the other plane down in Pennsylvania, and the Washington, D.C. Pentagon crisis. So,
I have a deep connection to 9/11, too. I don't know if you're aware of how, well, you probably are a little bit, but just I'm very deeply connected personally to 9/11.
Well, do you want to take that topic first and end with my candidacy, or should we?
Yeah, because.
Can you hold? Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead. Because the Twin Towers weren't the only thing that collapsed during that time period. Actually, a couple days earlier on Sunday, 9/9, Johnny Rock was performing at the Whiskey in Hollywood and talked to his musical brother Slick how we were going to make this the show of shows, and that at the end of the set, we would both run off stage and jump off stage and you know, fly through the air. As it was, Slick thought better of the move live, like it kind of had a change of heart. And I was committed to the ideal because I had jumped off every stage I've ever performed on. That was part of my routine anyway. The only one I hadn't done it on was the Whiskey because it's a little steeper and it's a small club, so there's not really the space for it to adequately, you know, do it proper. And so the problem is I had technical difficulties with my wireless system. Usually I'm on a wireless setup so I can just run and jump and go in the crowd any way I want. My system was down in the show. It crashed, so I was on a cord, which changed the whole dynamics of it all. Needless to say, when I did jump, they cut the lights, and I couldn't see what I was doing, and I landed and shattered my leg. So Monday, I had to stay home, and I believe it was Tuesday, or it was Monday. Actually, I'm sorry. It was Monday. I was at home when someone called me up and told me to look out and see the end of the world, and so I had a front row seat to watch 9/11 happen. Normally I would have been at work, but got to see the whole thing unfold. It was crazy.
Yeah. So how can you relate your very bad accident to what happened 2 days later? How did it impact you?
Well, like I said, my whole life really collapsed because at that moment we were going to launch Slick and Slim Band, and we had t-shirts that night, and we were going to literally, it was 9 months before I could even, jog. I mean, I was walking with a limp I was on crutches for about 4 months, and it should have been like a month and a half, but it was just so bad. And literally, it shut down what we were doing. And by the time we got the whole thing back together, Slick had a motorcycle accident. And so he was out for a year. So that was like a 2.5 year period. Everything went down and we could never put it back together. So it was kind of like the Twin Towers. It just all collapsed. you just kind of have to start all over again.
Well, that's profound.
Quite.
I mean, it's too bad that, I guess my recollection of 9/11 is I was working at SOS. Oops, maybe I shouldn't have said the name. Oh, well. And I was working at SOS with you. We were both there in 2001. And I felt strange because I only lived a mile from downtown L.A. I lived right across the bridge in East L.A. in Boyle Heights. And I thought, if there's going to be another attack, it could be in Los Angeles or somewhere else, you know, maybe Miami or Dallas or somewhere. And what could I do? I had a three-year-old, and he would die suddenly if there was a big explosion in L.A. So I guess my first concern was for my child. And he was also attending preschool about 6 blocks from, our job, which is also in downtown L.A. So I was a little scared for that. But then I got very moved when I saw the senators sing on Capitol Hill. They sang that song simultaneously, God Bless America. I remember actually Hillary being in that group, and it was sad and moving. And I remember seeing a couple ads after it happened, and like there was a picture of row houses with no flags, and then there was a picture of row houses with flags, and how it was going to bring the country together. And for a while it did. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So for a while it did bring the country together.
People were praying. People were going back to church. When anyone talked about God, no one laughed. No one mocked it. The country was humble, for at least for 2 weeks, and it was a different frame of mind. You know, there was a great reverence. And when they had sporting events or concerts where performers would come out, I remember the Super Bowl. Like U2 did a thing. I don't think it was the first year, I could be wrong, I think it was a year later that they did, you know, kind of a tribute. But the point is, the attitude, the tone of the country changed a lot. And after a while, it lessened and everyone got back to business as usual. What's interesting is it actually became almost counter 9/11 as far as the first couple of weeks, the news media was obsessed with it because there's ratings. And they were milking it. And so, yeah, every 5 seconds they were showing a building go down. But after that, it switched the other way where they weren't going to show anything. And they didn't show, like, the people that were jumping out of buildings. You know, that was, like, edited out. It's like, you know, that was one of the big problems with the fireworkers. It's like you got people landing on the pavement in front of you while you're trying to go in the building and work on stuff. And they didn't show that stuff. You know, I mean, you'd have to go on Spanish TV or on Al Jazeera or, you know, some other news media. But the CNN kind of people, they weren't showing that stuff. So we kind of sanitized a lot of things with 9/11, actually.
I know. You know, I'm not going to buy into all the conspiracy theories. The one that was the most valid was people said that the plane never hit the Pentagon. But that's not true. I'm just going to take it for what it was at face value, and it was a serious attack on America. And not just the 3,000 people died in the planes, but people died in the buildings and the Pennsylvania aircraft crash and employees in the Pentagon. And it was sad.
And as you recall, we worked with people, you know, some that felt it was a conspiracy or there was a cover-up. The problem I always have with that kind of stuff is, okay, you can't just have one person in on it. It's a whole network of people. You know, they're talking about that they were setting up explosives in the building, you know, a couple of days before, and there was insurance on the buildings, and, you know, that were set to either they put a policy on it or it lapsed after. I don't know. The point is they were trying to make this all set up. And the thing about it is, so it's like, you mean all those people on the plane, you know, because they were saying it really didn't happen. So all those people just left their families and all these phone records and things. It was just all fake. Nothing was real. and that all these soldiers, all the fire workers, everyone's in on this stuff, and no one's going to open their mouth. I find it hard to believe. And it kind of, the other problem you run into is, okay, if that's the case, then it was a mastermind, brilliant idea, I mean, as far as the execution. And then you go, well, which way is it? Is Bush totally a bumbling idiot who doesn't know what he's doing, or is he genius mastermind? It's like he's swinging from one way to the other, because the other way is like, well, you know, it was an incompetent administration. They got us in a war they didn't know how to handle. So it's like trying to have your cake and eat it at the same time. You know, it's not a consistent message.
I agree. But I guess the most disturbing thing, you know, we had a moment of truth, and the fact that America was isolated from any type of invasion for all those years, considering the fact that we've involved ourselves in a number of guerrilla wars, like the fruit company crisis in Central America, the Nicaragua crisis during Reagan, the Vietnam War, the Korean War. I mean, the fact that we've never been assaulted on our own homeland was inevitable to have changed. But what I take in the sour years of George W. Bush and people's disapproval of invading Iraq a second time, and the world hasn't gotten much nicer. It's pretty much stayed on that medium level of antagonism. And unfortunately, you can even see by the presidential choices that there's not much giant rays of hope. Obama was probably the biggest, but it might have been kind of a mirror and, you know, like a shimmering mirror game or whatever.
Yeah, if Obama was, he's half white, but if his appearance was totally white, like he looked like a white dude instead of a brother, I think half of the hype and everything wouldn't mean as much. You'd go, you know, it's just another president. But the fact is, he was an African American man, well educated, well spoken, charismatic, sexy, good looking, all that stuff. It's like, yeah, you know, it made a major impression. It's kind of like that show The Voice, you know, where they don't get to see the artist, they just hear him sing. If you just heard him talk, or, you know, as it were, sing, you'd go, yeah, this is okay. But the fact is, when you visually see someone, it changes your perception. And I find that even to be true. Sometimes American Idol or something will be on, and I won't look at the person singing because I'm busy doing other stuff. And they may sound good, but then I'll turn the corner and look at them, and if they're really good looking, well, it changes my whole perception. Fantastic. Just because they look hot, you know, whereas if they didn't look hot, I would go, oh, they got a decent voice, but I wouldn't be overwhelmed.
I agree. You know, I think visualization's a big thing in America, but maybe we can segue now into the last 15 minutes because we hit the mark. I'm running for school board, and I'm not going to base it on looks. I'm running against a 71-year-old doctor with liver spots, but otherwise he looks okay. A young black man who's 32 from Nigeria who has a good job with the county, and me. So you could just say Charles is kind of like the Obama, I'm the Hillary, and the other guy is maybe like a Rand Paul, because of his age, not because of his belief system.
Yeah.
So the thing is the thing is any of us or none of us have a chance, but there are two advantages. There's Kirby has lived here 14 years, and he knows a lot more people. Plus, he was the head of his medical union as a doctor, and we have a huge hospital system here for the whole Northland. Obiji sees a lot of clients every day. Usually it's, I hate to say it, probably crappy parents who are in trouble, and they have to go visit them and assess if the kids are going to be removed. And then there's me who, well, I have exposure to the East High School staff and the teachers, because my son attends, you know, Central City. Nobody really knows me except for the K Catholic schools because I only teach in the Catholic schools. And people know me in the hospitals because I drive clients around. So I want to be the friendly person who opens up to everybody. And I've tried to open up to existing board members who are kind of, some are kind of mean and snooty and they won't deal with the newbies. And there's nothing we can do about it except for just be courteous. But there's been a few, like Don, you and I discussed on another show, there's been a few endorsement processes that were pretty radical and not fair. And it's kind of put a two-edged sword on the whole situation. So,
well, I guess the question is, oh, by the way, just to, I did want to close one thing out on 9/11, just so if I can close this so I don't have to think about it for another 5 years. As far as the conspiracy stuff, the whole thing is that bin Laden a couple times tried to cause disaster, attacking a naval ship and bombing one of the subways. So it's not just like, oh, wow, this is all the government plan. It's like, okay, well, then the government was also planning all the other stuff. It's like you can't have it both ways. He attempted several times. That was his whole purpose in life for the last 10 years was just to accomplish that. But so I'm not too, that kind of discourages me from any conspiracy. Now back to the voting conspiracy, who should we vote for? I don't know. I don't know if Hillary would get my vote in this one here. I think I would head for the brother man, the Obama personality.
Well, Ben Carson is 22%, so if you want to vote for a black, he's number two in the party.
I'm speaking of you, because you compared yourself to Hillary, and the other guy was was like an Obama. So is that the person you're referring to?
There's a guy named Charles Obiegi. He's Nigerian, and he's a foreigner, but he's lived here 14 years. I'm pretty sure he's become a naturalized citizen. But he has a good head on his shoulders. We're actually kind of friends, and we talk, and I have nothing against him. He just happens to be running against in my district. So right now he's a would-be political opponent, but he's not really an opponent. We're just people all striving for the same goal.
Is he marriage potential?
No, he's 32 and he has two kids who are under age 7. I'm 20 years older than him.
Wow.
Don't ask those kind of questions on the air, at least not before voting day.
Oh, that's right. We have to wait till after.
Oh, by the way, my birthday is the 16th, so I want to make it through the primary.
Nice. In fact, we should tell your voting public to turn the volume down on your speakers while I'm giving my answers.
To have something in the intro about that, something like, turn your speakers down. I don't remember. It was some kind of joke thing.
Right.
But, I am kind of fading because I'm technically on the clock. So it's 2:48 in Minnesota. Can we do our conclusions now?
I think it's about time. Time to conclude with Jane Hoffman.
And it's your show too. And Don won the proverbial warlord of Africa who thinks that African kings will take over.
What have we learned this week with Jane Hoffman?
Number one, well, I'm going to sum up something from last week because I just listened to our, guess how long our show was last Sunday?
1 hour and 50 minutes.
You're off by 7 minutes. It was 1 hour and 43 minutes.
Wow.
So
time flies.
As Don was saying last week, I could not control Agatha Hall's death, my 22-year-old stepdaughter, and I cannot control who arrives at the polls on Tuesday. But on a positive note, one of my supervisors came to my lecture Wednesday night with his girlfriend, and they got to witness my organizational breakdown model on why government agencies break down. So I just want to, I don't really want to make a conclusion. I just want to be thankful that someone cared and that people attended and they learned something. And running for public office is really not that much fun because you take a lot of crap and you don't get a lot of accolades. However, I ran into somebody downtown today who read the article by my professor, Alexander Cole, about me, the letter to the editor, and he said, two people this week have given me compliments about that letter, and I think it's because of how much she praised me and the writing style. That's what made it seem more significant. So I thank Alexander Cole and Nicholas Dungy from Cal State Northridge for writing in. And I'm hoping they still publish Colin Zervas's letter from who's a local. With that, I'll let you take the floor.
Well, I've learned a lot of things. Let's see, I've learned that basically Donald Trump is the rising star, the rising hot air balloon of the Republican Party, and how far that hot air will take him. I don't think it'll take him all the way, but I think he will definitely put him on the center stage. He's going to get a lot of attention and a lot of notoriety, and that's what he really thrives for. Everything, he doesn't care if he wins or not. So I will say follow the truth wherever it leads you. Even if it's in a voting booth and you're writing in the Communist Party as your write-in vote, follow that truth wherever it leads you.
I have one last comment. I hope John's mathematical proportions are more accurate than his visual perception of jumping off a stage. Your electoral voting projections are more accurate than your visual choices before you jump off a stage.
Some mistakes you pay for once, and other mistakes you pay for every day of your life, as I found out for myself.
Yeah, because you said you have those chronic injuries now in your foot and leg.
In fact, my back right now is killing me. But, you know, it's just the way it is.
And look at where picking rock star women have gotten you.
I know.
We'll leave that answer open-ended since I wouldn't let you answer about my life. So with that, I'll play Master's Hand. We've already played. You have to send me some new songs plus the hard CD, so don't forget. Okay? With that,
I'll end the show.
Oh, go ahead.
I may be successful at it this weekend. You know, I'm applying. Sometimes I have to apply different philosophies to my life, it's just how I function. I mean, I work well that way. And part of it is kind of being negatively positive. By that, I mean, a lot of times I'm a victim of my own positivity, like, oh, I'm going to do this. Oh, I'm going to succeed in that. But if you kind of go into the negative, you go, that's not going to work. At the current rate I'm going, it's not going to happen. And it changes the whole tone of things. We talked a little bit earlier about what if you knew what the exact day and time you were going to die? It would change your priority level, probably. By that I mean, as if I knew I was going to die in, you know, 18 days, there's a few things I want to do. And so if someone were to, you know, call me and say, hey, I want to talk about this or that, I would say, you know what, I wish I could talk. I'm on a real deadline, right? That's how we are when we have deadlines. So they call it deadline. And the point being is I just need a little more urgency to some of the things I'm doing because, you know, people are casual about their lives around me. And it's like, that's how come a lot of things don't get done. So being a little bit negative about stuff is kind of helping me get some things done. You know, I just need to kick over some songs for you. And it's not going to happen at the current rate.
Well, I'm not
going to
pressure you, John, but I wanted to send Carry On and New Way to the radio station in town because I think you have a good chance of getting it played.
And, you know, I actually have the CD done. You know what actually is the big delay? Is the CD I have 17 songs or 16 songs on it, and it's just taking the time to format and print it on the label. And you go, well, that's easy to do. It's like, yeah, except I just need to spend about 45 minutes or an hour doing it, and what will happen is tonight I'll ride a bike home, get home at, you know, 1:30 or 2, do this and do that, mop up stuff, I'm be tired, maybe take a shower or whatever. It's like 4 in the morning. It's like, you know what, I'm crashing out. And this is like, it's normal because I got to get up at 8 and handle customers. So it's hard breaking that schedule or tweaking it. So I have to really be very aggressive and grab the moment. But I'm actually
it's okay.
About this.
By the way, Praysia has 490 views now on YouTube.
Really? Wow.
Yes. That's pretty good.
I'm going for 1,000, and after that, it's 1 million, baby.
Okay, well, Taylor Swift has 47.9 million followers on Instagram, so you have a ways to go. But I'm going to play your song now. I'm burned out, and I have to go.
Okay,
my mom's calling me.
Yes, well, you know, go ahead and play it. I'm only 2 billion hits behind, what's the guy name from Korea?
Kanye West?
No, he's a guy that does Gangnam Style. I think it's Psy is his name, I think, yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to play I Wanna Thank You, Lord, tonight from YouTube. Here we go.
Hallelujah.
pretty good on your feet.
Yeah.
With the white outfit going backwards.
It was an inspired moment. And just think if I practiced, too. That would have really been good. That was all on the fly. We were just like, go ahead.
Was Blanca's daughter the videographer?
Yes, Sunny G. In fact, she's on Facebook, and you know, I'll send her some of her pictures. And she's breaking out of her shell and performing and writing music and getting her major in music and video. So in the next 5 to 10 years, I think you'll see her do a lot of stuff and produce some people, too. It'll be kind of exciting.
Cool. Well,
yeah.
With that, we'll get more types of things like that on the show, and I'll let you go. Okay?
Excellent. And we'll see if I actually send you a CD. I'll make a commitment here.
Yeah, I'm going to text you once a day until you do it. Thanks.
Nice.
And take
I
care.
I like that.
All right, God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless you, and God bless America.
Good night. I'll see you Sunday night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.